This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings and welcome to the Galaxy Wars podcast, your favorite Doctor Who podcast in all of the land. We're your host, The Grace, and we are not a Doctor Who podcast, but it seems like we are turning into one with episode number 17 of our Doctor Who storyline. But this is part two of our two-part Time Lord episode arc, and this is featuring the Doctors. We are focusing 100% on all the Doctors from Doctor number 1 all the way to Doctor number 12. And we can't get on Doctor 13 because we don't really know much about Jodie Whittaker. But if you need to do some research and recap, the Time Lords are from Gallifrey. They control time and space, and they're like the Time Police, but they stay neutral, Switzerland. And the Doctor is a renegade Time Lord. So we're going to get right into our Doctors, and we'll start with the Doctor, the very first Doctor.
And our favorite now.
My personal favorite.
You know, we talked about him last week, and we didn't like him. But it turns out that that was like kind of an intentional thing by the producers, because they were going to introduce the concept of the companions, and the companions were supposed to make him more human.
Yeah.
So we'll just hit some of the big bullet points here.
He was the worst.
He actually refers to himself as the first Doctor.
Yeah.
Which is good. And he did start out as an asshole, but he does learn compassion as the series goes along. And I don't know how long he went. I think he went straight. I think he went for 3 years.
Yeah, he went up to 66.
Yeah. And he's the first to have companions. He's the one that started the idea of the companions. He was the one that said, everybody should do it because it will humanize you and it will make you a better doctor. His companions were, we went over
Susan.
Sue, Ian, and Barbara. So I'm not going to rehash those. Barbara and Ian were teachers and Sue, they were bad teachers, and Sue was his granddaughter.
Yeah, you can go back to the Unearthly Child episode that we covered.
Right.
And then you'll learn all about those three people.
We also had Vicky. She was an orphan from the 25th century. She eventually fell in love with Troyes, who's a warrior and a hero from Trojan War. And she actually becomes a famous Greek woman.
I love that his name is Troyes.
Yeah.
From Troy, probably.
Yeah. Then we have Stephen Todd. We're going to hit bullet points because there's a million companions and 12 doctors, so
yeah,
we're not going to go in deep.
We'd be here for a week.
Yeah. Then Steven Tyler, he's a space pilot from the year like 3500 or somewhere around.
Also a phenomenal singer.
Yeah.
From Aerosmith.
He was in about 10 stories, and that turned out to be like 38 episodes. And he was played by Peter Purvis. There was Sarah Kingdom, which I really like that name.
That's a good name.
She's a space agent from a secret agency. She's from the year 4000. You know, and the thing is about all these, they didn't put a lot of effort into... She wasn't from 4221. She was 4, from 4000 exactly. The other guy was from 3500.
And still in black and white.
Yeah. One girl's from 5000. Then we have Dodo Chaplet.
Another great name.
Yeah. She was a British teen from the 60s, swinging 60s. She was kind of like a naive teen, which would be kind of cool because he's like an old codger and she's like 16-year-old kid.
Was she kind of stupid, do you think?
Yeah.
Dodo,
yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah.
I get it.
But then we have Polly, and that's just Polly.
Yeah.
She was a secretary, but she's like the opposite of Dodo. She was like smart, hip, woman, attractive.
Yeah, Polly was a cute chick.
Yeah. And Polly was finally got involved with Ben Jackson, and he's from the British Navy. He's like a regular down to earth guy. So
yeah, wasn't he a surgeon?
Was he a surgeon?
I think he might have been a surgeon. Yeah. Or like a medic.
Yeah, in the Navy. I think he was a medic. And that's all his companions. Like I said, we talked about him a bit the last time, but he's the one that introduced all these ideas, but he was, and we'll talk about it later, but he was kind of like, he introduced that diggishness that carries over, but you know, he realized that the best way to counter that is to have these human companions of people. And most companions are female, as you'll figure out.
As they should be.
Right.
I mean, if you're a space doctor. But the thing about the first doctor that, you know, when we were talking about it 2 weeks ago and then last week and doing the research, we never, you know, you and I have talked about how the doctor doesn't fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
He brings his granddaughter on the first season. So it, you know, we never got to the point of, do the doctors reproduce? And we talked about it and theorized about it, but this kind of proves that they did fall in love.
Somewhere along the line.
For a minute or two where a baby was produced. And this one, you know, obviously he kept in touch with his daughter or son or whatever, and the granddaughter came with him. Or he just found this girl and said, you're my granddaughter now.
Well, you know, in his story, the doctor, not any iteration, just the doctor, has parents and has, so, I mean, it does happen, but
yeah,
it's not part of the show, which is weird that they never made it part of the show.
But. Especially when you start with a family.
Right.
Like, it's kind of weird. But from the first doctor, who is my least favorite, to another doctor, who I know really nothing about, the second doctor, portrayed by Patrick Troughton. He appeared in the 10th Planet episode for the first time, and then last appeared in the War Games episode, which is huge. Like, the War Games, I found throughout all my research, it goes back to the War Games, or like the Time Wars. There's always a war. And he was a doctor from October 1966 to June of 1969, from seasons 4 to 6. And he was, probably has the best nickname of all the doctors, the Cosmic Hobo, because he was clever, but always kind of a step ahead of his adversaries, but looked like he was just plucked off the streets. Like, hey, you got a job. Very childlike trickster, but was also known to be like a rude schemer.
Okay.
He was another black and white doctor.
Right.
So you really didn't, like, his whole persona was just like kind of drab, as London was back in the 60s.
Yeah, the late 60s.
But to me, he kind of gave off the vibe of being bipolar.
Okay.
Where he's like really childlike, but then he can be super prickish. And you saw that throughout his storyline. The appearance, they described him as having jet black hair. And my man could have had blonde hair, but we wouldn't have known. And he was known for wearing a black frock coat, which was several sizes too big, giving the hobo look. Big baggy pants like Bozo the Clown, and a light-colored button-up shirt.
He kind of had like a Mo.
Yeah.
It looked like Mo from the Three Stooges a little bit.
He threw that stupid little stovepipe cap on him.
Yeah.
And a bow tie. Something about the bow tie that Doctor Who was like, we're going to reinvent the bow tie again. We're going to bring it back. And he's also known to wear a cloak as...
All right.
You know, I would love to wear a cloak if I could, but in today's society, I don't think I could. He was much younger than our first doctor. So
right.
First doctor, if I'm not mistaken, was probably the oldest.
Yeah.
And then it was probably Capaldi was probably the second oldest.
Yeah, Capaldi's in his 60s now, but not like, I think he's just like right there, 61, 62. I think the first doctor had a long career on the stage before he got to so I think he was pretty old by the time he got to the doctor.
Capaldi's a hip 60.
Yeah, exactly.
The first doctor is I'll break a hip 60. So it's one of those, you know, that it's a time thing.
Yeah,
because in the, you know, I get it. But with the second doctor being much younger than his predecessor, he ushered in the Monster of the Week style, and there was a lot of horror style writing for him. This is where you moved from traditional time traveling, where we're going to Cro-Magnon times, to, all right, there's an alien, there's a monster. But this kind of writing drew mixed reviews from the fans.
It's weird because now it's like a huge thing that everybody loves about it.
And that's what it's known for, cool creatures.
The horror aspect of it. But I that's, you know.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, when I was reading it, Peter Davison, the fifth doctor, Colin Baker, the sixth doctor, right? Sixth Doctor. Sylvester McCoy and Matt Smith all said that he's their favorite. And they took a lot from him.
Okay.
Which is weird, because I would have thought Tom Baker would have been the favorite for most of them. And his his story arcs for, you know, the second Doctor, they were pretty much scrapped.
Right.
Like, a lot of his stuff was gone. You're like, you can't even find it on the dark web. BBC just got
rid of
it.
Yeah, there's a lot of unfinished stories. There's a lot of, like, in looking and trying to watch stuff, you see there's a lot of story arcs that just ended.
Yeah.
Like, and they never end it the way they should be. And, you know, like, if you really got into the companion stuff, there's companions that just go away.
Yeah.
And then they have to retcon and rewrite and stuff like that.
Yeah, and out of the three seasons that he was in, the fourth, fifth, and sixth, he had two complete stories.
Yeah.
That was it. Only two. And it was Tomb of the Cybermen and The Enemy of the World. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, and this is like 36 maybe stories, and we only were left with two. So he's a forgotten doctor. I got a couple forgotten doctors.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a big thing.
But the eighth doctor was super forgotten. It was like a half a paragraph on.
Well, he just did a TV movie.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he was. That was it. That was his only story arc. That was the only thing he showed up for.
Yeah, he got to be a doctor for once. And I mean, that's a rite of passage for the Brits. But as far as companions, you know, Ben Jackson and Polly came along with the second doctor. Mm-hmm. He had Jamie McCrimmon, Victoria Waterfield, and Zoe Herat.
All right.
I don't know much about them. Again, these are ones that kind of just fell off the map. They could have died. They could have been returned back to their time, but they were there. And you know, the end of the Doctor, which kind of ushers in the third Doctor, which you'll talk about, he sacrificed himself for humanity. The Time Lord sentenced the Doctor to exile and forced him into regeneration, ushering in the third Doctor.
Right. And this third Doctor, who is played by John Pertwee, father of Sean Pertwee, or Alfred now from Gotham.
Oh, such a badass Alfred, too.
Yeah,
like, he's my,
I really like him.
He might be my favorite Alfred.
Which made me want to know John Pertwee more, actually. Yeah, he's a great Alfred. Yeah, he was... The third Doctor spent most of his time exiled on Earth, where he did... he worked for UNIT, which is United Nations Intelligence something. I can't remember the T. So he became like a science advisor for UNIT. Maybe the head science advisor, I think, right? But this guy is... he might be my favorite Doctor, and not because of Sean Pertwee.
He's got great hair.
Yeah.
Oh, great hair.
But he's like a James Bond. He's first of all, he's the first in color, and as soon as they got color, they used all of them.
Yeah.
Like, his outfits were. This is where you get to. Every Doctor has a, like a style, like a new, like, color aesthetic, a new style, and something different. And he's the one that started it. Like, yeah. All his outfits are crazy.
There's a lot of crazy outfits throughout the world of Doctor Who.
Like, he's described mostly as, like, suave and dapper and, like, tech-savvy. So, you know, that's good. And since he's, you know, in an intelligence-gathering facility, like, they're good aspects to have. He's basically a secret agent. And he actually talks about it. He becomes a diplomat because he's smarter than everybody else. He becomes a linguist on Earth, and he's great with disguises. He knows Venusian Aikido. So he's not afraid to throw some fists.
Do you think with the third Doctor and the popularity of James Bond in the 60s, 70s, they tried to just rip it off and make it a sci-fi version?
It seems like it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what they basically make him. He's, you know...
he's a space Bond.
Yeah. You know, the Time Lords wind up sending him on secret missions.
Yeah.
Like, so everything about his story is basically James Bond.
Just with...
Yeah.
Timey-wimey stuff.
He just has... And he doesn't get to use it to go travel through time. He's trapped on Earth, which is cool because they get to use that idea.
Yeah.
But,
It was television Bond, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah, and...
It worked, obviously.
He created the catchphrase that we're going to hear everybody uses it. Reverse the polarity. But he said reverse the polarity of the neutron flow, and it became a famous catchphrase throughout Doctor Who. Like, everybody, whenever they get into a problem, they just say reverse the polarity. And
yeah, I think
it doesn't. It's meaningless, but they do say it.
I think in Smith and Jones we talked about the 10th Doctor saying that.
So, but like I was saying, this guy, like, he was an action first kind of guy. Like, even though he was a scientist, like, he would, you know, he had his own lab and the UNIT facility and everything. He didn't mind, like, getting in fist fights and doing stuff like that. So.
Neither does his son at this point.
And his companions were Liz Shaw. She was a scientist. she was actually like more of an assistant to him while he was at unit. He actually has, while he's exiled on Earth, he has like five companions that are unit based, and then Lishaw's one of them. The other three aren't really that, because they don't have full stories. Joe Grant's another one. She's an operative. She kind of, Liz Shaw was like almost as smart as he was.
Okay.
She had degrees and everything. Whereas Joe Grant plays just like your basic grunt for the unit.
Okay.
So she kind of like takes our place as the audience. Like Liz Shaw was so smart she didn't have to have anything explained to her. So kind of let the audience go in, what's going on? Like, how did that happen? Now, Joe Grant comes in, doctor has to explain something to her, and the audience gets to hear it. And then Sarah Jane Smith, who might be the most famous companion.
I would think so. Got spinoffs. And
she's had two spinoffs. She had one with K-9, and she had Sarah Jane Chronicles.
Still appears and stuff?
Well, she's dead now.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's like why she stopped in 2011.
In the comics and stuff, is she still appearing in those? Her likeness, I mean.
Yeah. And we're not going to go too deep because there's so much to go into with her, but spinoffs, she's been with four different doctors. She's been in the TARDIS with four different doctors.
She's got around. Certainly got around.
She's probably got the most screen time of any of the companions.
She might have more screen time than some, well, obviously, than some of the doctors.
Yeah. So I think she's not like her and Rose, which we'll get to much later, are kind of considered the two, you know, neck and neck of who's the best companion, but she kind of paved the way for it. And she was an investigative journalist and all of this other things, and she was really good. She was, you know, a pretty powerful character. She wasn't, like, dainty. So, but we're scratching the surface on her because due to time, but that's Sarah Jane Smith.
Yeah, we could honestly be here for...
Right.
If we got into Rose, River, Amy, Rory...
Jack.
Jack, Nardle... and Sarah Jane, we'd be here for, this would be a 7-part series probably.
Nardle said he's mostly likely going to return.
So excited. And they've said that Pearl Mackie's going to return with Jodie Whittaker as well. And, okay, you know, I get it. Okay. I get it. The first woman doctor needs another woman companion. Maybe Jodie Whittaker's doctor, the 13th doctor, will usher in the male companion.
Yeah.
Maybe the gender roles will switch.
We'll see.
I don't know. So that's the third doctor.
Yep.
One I want to get to know, like you said, you want to get to know him more. I would like to get to know John Pertwee a little bit more, since I like his son a lot. But the fourth doctor is the one that's really talked about a lot. It's Tom Baker. He first appeared in the Planet of Spiders episode and last appeared in Logopolis. No, I said that in the car. Logopolis. And I was like, nope, Logopolis. So, and that was, he was the doctor from June 74 to March 81.
Okay.
172 episodes for 7 seasons,
yeah.
The 12th to the 18th, and he's the longest tenured doctor. And maybe our parents' generation's favorite doctor.
Yeah.
Because he was, I mean, he was America's favorite doctor because he was always on PBS until the cancellation.
That's when I got to know Doctor Who, is from watching PBS and seeing all this crazy, because it like... When PBS would broadcast BBC, like, I don't know what time, like after midnight, like a Friday or something, they'd start broadcasting BBC, and I'd, you know, see this, Red Dwarf, and a bunch of other crazy English stuff. And
my parents still watch PBS for all the BBC shows, like Keeping Up with Appearances and stuff like that. All the shows that I can't get into at all. But thankfully, we have BBC America where we can, we Americanized everything, so we were able to watch our Doctor Who. But the fourth doctor was born fearless after the third doctor died, facing his fears. But at this time, he was mentally unstable. And if I'm not mistaken, when he regenerated, he immediately tried to strangle Sarah Jane.
Yeah.
Which is, it's an intense welcoming. You know, you turn into another person and you strangle a woman as soon as you wake up. It wasn't a good look. But he is known to be very short-tempered, a know-it-all, but has a very childlike and whimsical approach to things as well. And you know this doctor mainly because of his huge smile, his curly hair, and his plum overcoats, which, you know, they became more vibrant with the 80s, his overcoats. He would wear vests, he had the pirate-like boots, and his multicolored scarf.
That was like 12, 13 feet long.
Yeah, it was... It was Yao Ming in a scarf form, wrapped around a man who is probably, oh my God, 5'7", 5'8", maybe?
No, he might actually be taller than that. I don't know. It's hard to tell because he wore the long, tall hat, the trench coat, and the scarf. Everything was long.
Yeah, everything was so big on him. He was very swashbuckler-esque.
Yeah.
And we actually saw him at Great American or Great Philadelphia Comic Con.
Yeah.
And he's put on some weight.
Well, yeah, he's old now.
Yeah, he is old. And he doesn't have the curly hair. He's got, I think when we met, we saw him, he had a beard, longer white beard.
Yeah.
But he has influenced the series completely. He kind of reinvigorated it, if that's even a word. But he underwent several different producer changes. So all of his storylines changed.
He went from everything around him was changing, and he had to kind of keep the same.
Yeah, he went from the traditional Doctor Who storylines with the Monster of the Week sometimes to the Gothic horror influence styles, and then he went back into like the 80s like wild crazy story arcs where it's coke fueled, and you know some of his like we said you know their his story arcs are increased violence, which got pretty poor reviews because again.
Yeah,
I guess this is a show that was meant to be more feel good.
Yeah, well, John Pertwee did that. That was a thing that happened with him. But it was a little bit of physical violence, but you know that was not supposed to be what the Doctor did.
Yeah,
it was established the Doctor wasn't a violent person.
Yeah, and then in Tom Baker's, you know, there's blood, there's aliens dying. I think there might have been a decapitation in the 80s. It wouldn't surprise me, but you go from increased violence with some of the story arcs and then very like child whimsical. And I wrote whimsical a lot because it was that feel good, you know, you're going to learn. It was an afternoon special kind of deal where you're able to get a message out of it or moral. But, you know, some of his best storylines that I like are Pyramids of Mars, Seeds of Doom, and the Armageddon Factor. I think that he was just very like influential. And it goes back to what we were saying with Patrick Troughton being the favorite. I would have imagined that, like, for everyone else, that Tom Baker was the favorite.
Yeah, well, I guess if you grew up with it and this wasn't an afterthought coming up, I guess you could say, oh, you know, I knew Patrick Troughton and I saw it, or I've seen it, and, you know, all these other doctors, their parents probably had a favorite doctor, and that's influential.
Yeah,
and you know, but these other doctors grew up in the same time this guy was being. As Tom Baker was on TV.
Yeah, I would have thought, when I saw Matt Smith's name on there, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. He was 25 when he became the Doctor. Yeah. Like, he would have been just born around the time that, or no, probably born with Colin Baker was the Doctor.
Yeah.
So, with Tom Baker, I would have been like, okay, you go back. Maybe he's just trying to sound cool and like, oh, I watched all the Doctor Who, so Troughton's my favorite.
You know,
two stories, and he's your favorite?
We'll get to this later, because I did an unofficial Facebook poll. But, yeah, he came up a lot. And
Troughton?
Yeah, Troughton. I know we're talking about Tom, and I expected so much Baker.
Yeah, so did I.
So much Baker. And it was here and there, because Baker is my favorite. But and he got 7 years, so somebody must have liked him. But there was a lot of, like, out of the older stuff, I'd say he probably came, the second Doctor came up, probably like, you know, I don't have the official numbers, but it was Tom Baker, Troughton, and probably Pertwee were the top three.
Wow.
Yeah.
And one of those makes my top five. The guy was trying to make my list, and Baker makes my top five, but that's because I know more of the newer doctors.
Yeah.
So the four new doctors were the other four. So it's kind of like pretty pretentious to me. But we'll go into his companions, and he had a few. He had just like the same amount as our first doctor, where he had like 47.
I'll say this. The old doctors had lots of companions.
Yeah. Because, well, I feel like that was a casting issue, because the first doctor was a dick, and then like nobody wanted to work with him. And then Pertwee, you know, I feel like they just, or well, Troughton, they didn't even know where the hell they were going with his series.
Right.
They were just like, all right, we're going to cancel this, so we need a new storyline, and they're going to bring on that. But Tom Baker, obviously, is going to have a lot of companions due to his tenure. He had Sarah Jane Smith, which you described earlier. Harry Sullivan, who is a unit medical officer. One of my favorite companions, K-9.
K-9.
Which is a robotic dog from the year, again, 5000. Not 5012, 5000. Leela, the savage 17 warrior, who is one of the cutest companions.
Yeah.
If I may say so, based on her outfit.
Yeah.
We have Romana, who is a traditional time lady. Nisa, an alien aristocrat of the planet Traken. Adric, a boy genius from a parallel dimension called E-Space. And then Tegan, an Australian flight attendant. So, like, you go, like, it's the job titles for these people. Like, oh, Savage Warrior, aristocrat, boy genius, flight attendant. So, and it's you know, I get it. Yeah. You just pick up who you can and who works with the doctor. You know, I don't think I would pick up Rhodes Scholars. Because I'm, you know. But with the Fourth Doctor, after saving the universe from the Master, the Doctor fell off into a space telescope, leading to the regeneration into the next Doctor, the Fifth Doctor.
The Fifth Doctor, played by Peter Davidson. He's a weirdo.
He might have the worst style of all the Doctors.
Yeah, he's he's dressed as an Edwardian cricketer. That's his outfit.
Yeah.
So that's what they would wear while playing cricket.
But he had all the question marks on him, right?
No, that's not him yet.
Oh, that's Sylvester McCoy, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, never mind. Let's go back.
Yeah. He's dressed as he's got long pants, like it's a peach-colored jacket, a sweater, and he's got a celery stalk on his lapel.
Yeah.
That's how you know him. And he's got a bowler, I think he's got a hat. But anyway.
We talked about the celery in the last episode and the Jelly Babies, which were a Tom Baker special.
The celery thing was...
Drank a lot of Bloody Marys.
No, he was allergic to a certain type of gas at a certain level. And if the celery was ever around that gas, it would turn purple. So that's how we'd know that it's silly...
It's cool. Blame the TARDIS.
Yeah. He's got a crazy style, but he wore a cricketer outfit, which I don't know what any of that means, because I've tried to watch cricket. I watched cricket in Jamaica for 2 hours, didn't know what was going on. The score was 200-20, but I had no idea what was going on.
There's a cricket course around us.
Really?
Cricket field in Gibbsboro, very local reference, but yeah, there's a cricket course. I don't see anybody ever playing.
No, because you need like 35 people on a team.
It's crazy.
This is not the cricket podcast.
We're gonna
start my other podcast.
We're gonna start a cricket podcast.
So they changed a lot of everything about the Doctor during this. Like you're saying, the public didn't respond well to the violence and everything, but you know, he got 7 years out of it, so they eventually did. So in this there was that creature the week went away, there was less horror. Less silliness, less camp. It was much darker and much bleaker because it did start out with Aldric dying.
Yeah.
So that kind of set the tone for the rest of the his tenure, you know. And the producers in this one, the old Doctor Who's weren't like the new ones where they kind of stuck with Moffat basically, you know, pushing everything going in one direction.
Yeah.
There's a lot of producer changes.
Yeah, especially in the 80s.
Yeah.
There were a lot of them.
So the producer for this one said, get rid of all that camp and all the silliness, and we're going to go, even though he's dressed like an idiot, we're going to go for more scientific accuracy. And they kind of went into that. And this is both darker and grittier. There was death. There was a lot more darkness to it, but it wasn't, you know, caused by any of the aliens. It was just him and how he dealt with people.
Very, very broody.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a change in the times. You know, we saw it with comics. They went from the real campy Boy Scout stuff, and then like the Frank Millers came in and did the Dark Knight, and then you had the Punisher and all that stuff, and it got dark.
It was the people that gave the finger to the comic book code of ethics. They were just like, screw you guys. I want to write good stories, and I can't fit it in your purview. And that's kind of what this happened, is people didn't like the violence, but, you know, they wanted better stories. And
yeah, they got the punk rock doctors.
Yeah.
Oh, they could have just had, like, stud belts and everything, but no, peach overcoat. All right.
Because a couple of things, he had celery stalk and way dressed like a cricketer. He carried a cricket ball, which he threw at people.
All right.
He also carried a manual for the TARDIS, which is a pretty smart idea that nobody else does.
God, how big is that manual?
He has a couple things in... it's got to be huge.
Yeah.
It's got to be, when you open it, it's like the TARDIS. It's bigger inside than it is outside.
Yep.
He crashed into the 10th Doctor. This happened in the 10th Doctor series, but he did crash, and they had to meet each other, and and figure out what's going to happen. And something that carries over into the new Doctors is, like, he had an acute sense of taste.
Okay. Well, based on the celery.
Yeah. So his companions were Adric, Nyssa, and Tegan. He had those as companions. And he had Vissler Turlough.
Oh, right.
Who was he was an alien from 1983. Okay. But he was an alien from Tryon, which is a planet Civil War, blah, 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 blah. But
so that was the same year that he was the Doctor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this guy...
So he was a current alien.
This guy had a pretty cool story. He wasn't being brainwashed, but he was in a war, and he wanted to go home, but he was stuck on Earth.
Okay.
So the Master said, look, if you kill the Doctor, I'll send you home. And, like, his big story arc is, do I do it or don't I do it? And that's his story arc for, like, 2 years.
Wow.
Like, it is do I or don't I? And what's going to, like, if he gets into a situation where it's him and the Doctor, will he do it?
Yeah, the world's worst mercenary.
Yeah.
The galaxy's worst mercenary.
then we have Chameleon, spelled with a K. It's a sentient, shape-shifting android. It looks like King John when they first find it. This is also the Master's controlling it.
Another character we'll have to do an episode on, the Master.
The Master eventually, the bad guys. Maybe we'll do a bad guy thing. But the Master, or the Doctor, eventually, like, frees it and helps it get its sentience back, and it's a free will. But the Master takes it over again and then begs the Doctor to destroy it, and the Doctor does. Doctor doesn't destroy it, like, shrinks it down and compresses it until it can't move and do anything anymore. And then we have Perry Brown, a.k.a., I'm going to try this, Perry Pygillium Brown. She's played by Nicola Bryant. She's an American, which was cool. The only reason I put her on there, and a botanist, and she was a bikini model or something when they had her on here.
Is she the only American companion?
Jack Harkness plays in America. Well,
no, he's British.
No, he's from the 50s. Well,
okay.
But he does play, but he has dual citizenship, and he actually is from the 51st century, but that's later
on. Yeah. Several centuries away.
So, and he dies, and he turns into, what's his name?
The Sixth Doctor.
The Sixth Doctor.
Colin Baker.
Colin Baker.
I got double Bakers.
You got both the Bakers.
Yeah, so Colin Baker debuted. Brothers. Yeah. You know what? This is my naivety. I went back and looked to make sure they weren't related. But Baker's kind of like Smith.
Yeah.
So I imagine that.
Well, they were Bakers.
Yeah. So the Sixth Doctor, Colin Baker, debuted March 1984 and then last appeared in December of 1986. This is the last Doctor before I was born. Okay. So all the Doctors, because I was born in 87. So for the first six Doctors, I was not a child yet. And he was in three seasons from 21 to 23, and that comprised of 11 stories. The Sixth Doctor, very, very, very flamboyant.
Oh, yeah.
With an overbearing and impatient personality. And he, in my opinion, besides Sylvester McCoy, had the worst style of all the Doctors. He did not match ever. Everything, his jacket, for one, was red plaid with green, yellow, and pink lapels. And Colin Baker actually said that his outfit and his wardrobe was described as an explosion in a rainbow factory, which it was kind of perfect. He
does look clownish.
Yeah, right? I don't understand the... I get that you get color. You get color on television.
Yeah. Well, we're 20 years. I mean, yeah, we're like 15 years into color now. Yeah. So,
but like peach jackets, you know, when I was in Ireland, and I know Ireland and England are completely different, but nobody was wearing crazy color jackets. You know, and we see Bonds and stuff that took place around the same time.
The thing is, I think what it is, I don't know. I mean, I think originally what it was when John Pertwee came in, it was he dressed himself.
Yeah.
And it was just that, you know.
Maybe it's because they're from space; they don't have a grasp on the culture.
I think as it went on, it became a thing, but it kind of like it's kind of kind of preposterous because the Doctor's not supposed to be like he's supposed to blend in a little bit, but this guy wearing you know, peach and plaid and a rainbow, or a 30-foot scarf.
He looks like a circus ringmaster.
They're never going to blend in, but it's that the crowd doesn't notice how they're dressed, and you know.
That's the first thing I would notice. I people watch so much that I've been like, "Why is this guy wearing a fish jacket?" If you were talking to this person,
you would be like, "Oh, Jesus Christ!" But that never happens.
Yeah.
So I think that might be part of it, is just to throw, you know, to confuse everybody a little bit.
But. Yeah, I wouldn't even be able to talk to Colin Baker's doctor. Just he's like, "Oh, hello!" He's got his rainbow jacket on. I'm like, "Oh no, get away from me!" But his series was put on an 18-month hiatus, which saw Baker go to work on Doctor Who stories for either on stage or audio. Right. So Colin Baker has a ton of Doctor Who canon stuff. He continues to be part of Big Finish's original Doctor Who audio adventures.
Yeah, I saw that for his, which is really cool. And like we were saying last week, the book and the audio stuff is huge. Yep. It's a very big part of their canon and what's acceptable. And it's like the resources you go to find information, consider them canon. So
yeah, you know what? To be honest with you, when we were doing our research, I tried to stay away from Wikipedia.
Right.
Because it was just like, okay, I could read everything off of Wikipedia, or I could go through all this canon stuff, and it was everywhere.
Yeah.
Like you type in Colin Baker and there's like everything comes up and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how far his reach was with the doctor. But during his time, he was more violent, again criticized. We're in the 80s now, you know. Yeah. I would imagine that violence was accepted on television.
Yeah, I mean, they had all the cop shows. It's like the birth of the cop show, really.
Kids in school were watching Red Asphalt, where it's just faces of death videos. Yeah. So I mean, that was in school. So a sci-fi, maybe they wanted to just escape from the craziness that is our world. So they were like, keep the violence away.
Well, this is all what we're talking from America. We don't know what was going on.
Exactly. There. Well, wasn't this with the Berlin Wall?
Yeah.
Around that time, so it was like Europe was going through some issues.
Yeah, and they had the. They had the watershed, you know, where after a certain point in time, you weren't allowed to show certain things and all that kind of stuff was happening. So I think maybe it was just that much different over there that, I mean, we're desensitized to a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Now you go over there and there's 8 o'clock in the morning and there's nudity on TV.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, good.
Which, you know, here in America.
You got to pay for it.
No, you don't.
Well, for TV, you have to pay for it. Well, you know, you don't. You just pay for your internet. But he had some great battles with the Cybermen in this Attack of the Cybermen arc. I know about the Cybermen, but they continue to come up, and I want to get to know more about the Cybermen. That, like, there was a story arc with the Master where he wanted to, I think, I don't know what doctor it was, but if the rain hit the dead people, they turned into Cybermen.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's an amazing thing.
Cybermen are pretty cool, and what's cool is, like, all of them, it's just like a lot of these aliens, it's overwhelming amount of numbers against, you know, small force. And Cybermen can reproduce just by taking brains or living tissue. So they don't need humans. They just need
a leaf.
They need something. Yeah. And the same with the Daleks. Daleks just, they have control of time, so they can get all the Daleks out of time and get them together. And so that's kind of like another Cybermen thing is they're just overwhelming.
Yeah, the lore and the I guess the emphasis that they put on their villains, even though some of them were monsters of the week, were really, really good. And then he was part of a Two Doctor storyline, as well as the Trial of a Time Lord full season story arc of season 23. I'm looking at it on IMDb and it was like Trial of the Time Lord number 17. And I'm like, oh, okay. So his whole season was just a trial. Which is something that I'm going to go back and watch. Yeah. And as far as our companions, he had Perry Brown, and that was you talked about Perry Brown.
Perry Brown.
Another one who was almost strangled.
They wake up as soon as they
regenerate.
Regenerate. They're confused and
When your fifth doctor went into my sixth doctor, he was like, all right, I'm gonna strangle the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Bye, Perry. And then there was Mel, the last companion before the cancellation, and the first complete companion to actually meet the Doctor before he met her, and was with the Doctor until his regeneration. And that walks us into the seventh Doctor.
Seventh Doctor. He is, I consider him the most interesting Doctor. And he is played by Sylvester McCoy.
Question marks, right?
Yes. So, we'll explain his style a little bit.
Which please do.
It kind of, he wears an overcoat, a gray overcoat with question marks on the lapels. He wears a vest that is yellow, green, and red, and with red question marks all over it. A red tie, a plaid scarf. He looks crazy. The question marks is he looks like the Riddler.
Yes,
he looks like the Riddler's dad. At first glance when you look at him, I guess you can call him.
He's kind of dopey looking.
Yeah, he's a dope and he's a buffoon and he plays that well. And when you first see him, he's doing pratfalls. He plays the spoons. He's a comic and he speaks in he uses a lot of what's called Dundreary-isms.
Okay.
You ever hear Dundreary-isms?
I have not.
I knew what they were, but I didn't know what they were called. It's it's called malapropiatisms. If I said birds of a feather, what would you say?
Flock together.
But in Dundreary-isms, you say birds of a feather gather no moss.
Okay.
So it's mixing two
things
and getting both wrong.
Yeah.
So he used them all the time, and that was his comic relief for the show.
Oh, the writers are probably, we had this idiot. Let's just capitalize on it.
But what was weird about him, and what was crazy is, he was a buffoon. He always was a buffoon. He acted like it everywhere. And his thing was absolutely no violence. None whatsoever.
Yeah, completely
so
different.
So I guess this is where, they're turning that corner and they're kind of, after 20 years of fans saying no violence, they're like, all right, well, you'll get no violence, but...
we're going to cancel the series after.
So here's the way I look at it. He's got a 16-year-old a companion named Ace, which is weird, but and Mel carried over, but only briefly, and then Ace. And Ace is a 16-year-old kind of runaway with mommy issues. So he's got this 16-year-old, and he does things to her he's constantly lying to her.
Yeah.
And he does this throughout. He lies, and he'll just hide the truth to get his way. And sure, he's saving the planet, and he's doing what doctors do, but he's kind of being a real asshole but he's not. People don't see him as an asshole. They see him as kind of a... And then Ace starts to distrust him and kind of comes to a point where it's I can't... Whatever you say, I can't believe you. So, but Ace is young. She's only 16, 17 years old, so she doesn't know any better, and she doesn't have a better place to go.
Yeah, and she comes from a broken home.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird... the doctor's really taking advantage of this young girl. And I think he does this clown thing as a sleight of hand, a magic act.
Yeah.
Because he's always scheming. He's always got plots and plans. And he's always trying to win the game. And that's how he sees everything, as a game. So I think it's he does the buffoon and the clown so you don't pay attention to him stabbing other people in the back and taking advantage of people. Sure, no violence, but... I think real big. I wrote sociopath.
Maybe. Well, yeah. If he's hanging around a 16-year-old girl,
right? Yeah. He's doing real weird things, and it's progressive through his arc. He starts you see the dunderisms, and you see the pratfalls, him falling over all over the place, and he can't walk straight lines. Or, sometimes to the detriment of he's doing pratfalls to hurt himself, and he's doing all these weird things, but it's all a distraction gradually through the story arcs. The distraction takes away from everybody else. So that's why I think he's kind of interesting, and I don't know what reason they wrote him like that. It doesn't really say. I couldn't find any good information if that was intentional. But, he is the one that got canceled. after 26 years, his series came to an end. So it might have went somewhere eventually in story arcs. But
maybe they tried to rewrite the whole scheme of things where the pratfalls and the Dunderisms were the human aspect of him trying to fit in with the humans. And then the conniving stuff was the Gallifreyan.
Yeah.
And they tried to make him, because you see that go back with a bunch of the characters. Tom Baker was kind of broody, but then whimsical. And then same thing with Colin Baker and Troughton and all those. They're too layered.
You know
what I mean? And we see that with like Tennant and Capaldi too. They're kind of...
Yeah, maybe it's the human, because they, you know, going all the way back to the first Doctor, who says you need to have companions that humanize you. Well, maybe they are getting humanized, but it doesn't, it's like not connected.
Yeah, the Gallifreyan bleeds into the human.
And since it's not a natural thing, they do it in an awkward way. But I just think, because the way that he was written and the way that it's played is, it was all to cover up his bad points.
Yeah.
It was something he intentionally did.
Yeah, maybe they knew they were getting canceled.
Maybe.
You know, the first Doctor of the original series was a dick, and you end with an asshole at the last one. So it's tough, man, for you to have a series where you replace the main character maybe every 3 years.
Yeah.
It's got to be incredibly hard. And everybody wants that role.
Yeah, and not to replace them, but not make it total, like 100% new, that it's unrecognizable, but to make it something that people will, you know, still not get bored with.
So yeah, you're just walking into really another man's shoes and just doing your thing. It's extremely tough.
He had to, besides all that, I think he might have been a sociopath. It's just the way he's
portrayed. Sounds like it.
He had Mel from Six. He also had Ace, who was in for 31 episodes. She was played by Sophie Aldrin.
Just being lied to for 31 episodes.
Well, that's what, like I said, it's sometimes he would say it's for your own good, and it forced her, like she wound up kept calling him the professor because he took an interest in like teaching her things and teaching her about the world.
Okay.
There's a lot of times where he'd hide the truth just so she'd figure it out on her own, but that wasn't always the case. So
he's a doctor I'm going to skip over.
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting, but she's also like, she was real gifted in chemistry, and she invented an explosive called Nitro 9, which she would carry in canisters and throw at people.
Nice. So okay.
That's Ace's story for a second there. So he he got canceled.
Yes.
Didn't really get a regeneration or death, but he does. There is a regeneration.
Yeah.
He regenerates into
Paul McGann, who plays the Eighth Doctor. First appearing in the Doctor Who television movie, and later ending his tenure in The Night of the Doctor.
Right.
And he was in two total episodes from May of 1996, and it was Doctor Who and The Night of the Doctor. And Paul McGann, his Doctor was kind of your Casanova. More romantic figure, the most romantic figure to ever portray the Doctor.
Okay.
He was your Rico Suave, if you will. Charming, enthusiastic, had a really a love for adventure. So he wanted to just go out there and travel the world and bring his companions. And, you know, this is the one where you would think he would fall in love with his companions, maybe marry them.
Right.
But I don't think anybody's going to marry him with his getup that he had. He was an English cowboy.
Yeah.
And when I was looking at it, it said Wild West Wild Bill Hickok costume. With stolen leather shoes. So my man was just, he was a thief.
Yeah.
And he just tried to con his way. He was a con man.
Yeah.
But he later moved in from the Hickok jacket to a beaten down brown leather coat.
Okay.
So, he, you know, with the times, he went from riding his Mustang to his Harley.
Yeah, he's riding across America and he needed something a little hardier. So
let me get this stolen probably from... The Doctor's look is very thrift store chic.
Yeah.
Where it's just, let me find whatever we can afford and we're going to dress you. But with this Doctor, the Eighth Doctor, he initially was part of the TV film, which was very successful in United Kingdom and Australia, where, again, like I was telling you, I think earlier in the week, they're trying to reboot, Australia's trying to reboot a canine series.
Yeah.
Where canine regenerated into a new canine.
Okay.
So... You know, I don't know if that's still happening, but the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann, was not successful in the United States, and he only gathered 5.5% of the viewers with that movie. And this was a time, this is 96, this was a time when Star Trek was going, and yeah. You know, you would have thought that the sci-fi genre would have been taken off. So you, maybe it was overexposure with like Battlestar and Star Trek, and what else was happening in 90? Stargate?
Stargate.
Yeah.
Was going on.
Red Dwarf?
Red Dwarf had been going on for a long time.
Lex, all those shows were still going. So maybe Doctor Who fell victim to its own genre. It came in.
Well, they took, how many years was it between?
89 to 96.
So 7 years it's been off the air at this point. So.
And they come back with the only Doctor Who movie.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what? Americans like movies and don't like TV. Let's make a movie. And they did, and it failed. So he only got the two series, but the Eighth Doctor has thrived in audio adventures as well as novels.
Yeah, he's got a huge, huge amount of audio adventures.
I think he has the biggest canon of all the Doctors. His comic series in Doctor Who magazine kept the flame burning from 96 until the premiere of the new series in 2005, which ushered in the Ninth Doctor. But the like I said, the biggest canon of all the Doctors, his adventures take place in three different continuity arc based on the way they were distributed. So his television arc in the movies, those two episodes you had, that was it. Then he went into the comics, then he went to the audio adventures. And the television movie, the story arc was an Americanized battle in San Francisco against Chinese gang and the Masters. Did you ever see this movie?
No.
It's very, very, like, let's put the Doctor in San Francisco and have him fight.
Okay. I saw flashbacks of it and stuff like that, but I'd never seen that.
Yeah, he was fighting the Triad and the Master. And he had one companion throughout his whole tenure, and it was Grace Holloway, a cardiologist who helps the Doctor defeat the Master, spoiler alert, in the 1996 classic, the Doctor Who movie. And the Eighth Doctor came to an end as he regenerated into the War Doctor in a mini episode called The Night of the Doctor. And that kind of ushered in.
The War Doctor takes place in our timeline, 2013, I think. So.
Yeah, and that's played by John Hurt.
Yep.
Love John Hurt. The late John Hurt.
Yeah.
Was upset when he died. And that ushers in the Ninth Doctor. The most current, or well, not the most current, but the reboot of the Doctors.
The reboots of the Doctors. so yeah, Ninth Doctor, we have Christopher Eccleston. Christopher Eccleston, kind of, they wanted to get as clean slate as possible. So when he got rebooted, they got rid of... He wasn't eccentric and campy.
Mm-hmm.
He actually was kind of brooding. He wore a black leather jacket, black trousers, and a t-shirt.
Yeah, he was a normal looking dude.
Yeah, and he wanted... It was Eccleston's choice. He said, I wanted my acting to be the most eccentric part about it, and I want it to be a foundation for something new. He kind of alludes to... He might have known how short his time was as a doctor.
Yeah, because it was only one season, right?
Right.
And when I was reading, because I like Chris Eccleston from Thor. That's where I first met him. He used his own accent.
Yeah.
He didn't want to switch
up. Yeah, he's from Northern, and... Well, that's another big thing that Whovians were mad at was he didn't sound intelligent. He sounded like he was from the North. I'm from America, so I don't really understand. Yeah. Like, I don't know the difference. But, I mean, like, you could definitely hear it when he talks. And, you know, he sounds more like, you know, I'll limit my knowledge, but not Snatch, but who wrote Snatch? The British guy was married in Madonna.
Oh, Guy Ritchie.
Guy Ritchie, yeah. He kind of has like a Guy Ritchie actor, like a character in one of his movies.
It's kind of like how Americans think of stereotype the South.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that's what happens, and I think that's, you know, and he decided, well, why couldn't there be smart people? But what doesn't make sense is why would an alien doctor or an alien from another planet have a different accent?
Yeah.
But hey, who cares? He travels in time.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah. He was the first of the new doctors. If you could sum it up in one line, his idea was don't think or talk about the past. And he really never did. The way they got away with that being okay was, you know, he kind of, like, there's a small story arc of him losing Gallifrey and all the Time Lords. So he's kind of doesn't want to think about it. He just wants to live in the present, live in the future, and not think about what happened to his plan. And that's a story arc that carries over until the War Doctors. You see what happens. But so from 2009 to 2013, you really don't know, and they don't talk about where the other Time Lords are. They just mention them kind of like there was a war, there was this, there was that. They're just not here anymore. So, but I guess I think people argue most about him, whether you love him or hate him.
Yeah, he was a hard watch for me.
As a doctor, yeah.
Man, I think you had told me, because you said, start with him, when I said I was getting into Doctor Who many moons ago. And I started with him, and I got maybe 4 episodes in. And you told me to keep going, but I couldn't. Yeah. It was tough for me.
Well, you know, I guess Doctor Who's one of those things that's good, because a lot of episodes do reflect back to the past, but they're not, like, bound by it.
Yeah.
Because it is just the nature of the way they you know, talk about everything. What I will say about him is maybe the guy that is more known for his companions than he is for himself, his doctor. He ushered in Rose Tyler, who, like we said, is probably, next to Sarah Jane, probably the most popular companion. Oh, maybe Amy Pond now.
Yeah, a lot of people love Amy.
So Rose Tyler, she was kind of like lower class Londoner. She didn't go high in school. She dropped out of school, but she was real smart. They played her real like street smart and savvy, and like she was able to kind of. And the reason why more known is and the producers kind of said this is, we didn't expect it to happen, but she became an equal and maybe more than Christopher Eccleston as the Doctor. Like, she might have been a more important character than the Doctor for her and Eccleston's time together.
It's a total flip from the Seventh Doctor, where it was, the Seventh Doctor, where it was, you know, I'm teaching you a lesson for your better good. Yeah. I'd call me the, or she called, Ace called the Doctor the Professor. Amy's actually, or not Amy, Rose. is the professor.
She kind of, you know, in her own way, even though she doesn't have the degrees and she's just a smarter, better person. Like, and her humanity kind of rises up and carries her forward. And some cool storylines. She has the Bad Wolf. She actually creates a temporal paradox. Like, her existence and her just moving through time creates this temporal paradox, and she becomes the Bad Wolf, but she doesn't know that. She just knows what the Bad Wolf is, and the Bad Wolf is trying to like remove her from time, but she doesn't know the Bad Wolf is herself, and like she eventually learns about the Bad Wolf, and she's pulled into another universe. And she exists in another universe where she exists now with another universe's doctor.
That could have been a spinoff.
Yeah.
Shocked it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think they were trying to make sure they had her in their back pocket for a long time. And they did bring her out, I think, three years ago. And
they could bring her out for the spinoff.
They probably will.
The Rose Tyler Chronicles.
When her first trip, she went to see the destruction of the Earth like 5 billion years in the future. That's a pretty cool first trip.
That's a pretty good jump into the future.
Another guy was Adam Mitchell, who was a boy genius. He was a gamer or something like that, and he used what he learned in the future to profit in the present. So he was actually kicked off the TARDIS by the Doctor.
Broke rule number one.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Then he had Jack Harkness. He was first openly bisexual character. He's like omni. Okay. Race. Like
pansexual?
Pans, like anything.
Yeah.
Like, nothing scares him. During the 51st century, he looks like Indiana Jones. We talked about him a little bit last week. He's got a spinoff. He's got Torchwood series, so not going to get into too much about him, but he's able to travel in time by himself, all kinds of stuff.
With the fob watch.
Yeah.
Or the vortex manipulator.
Yeah. He's called the Man That Cannot Die, because for some reason, the reason why he's from the 51st century and the doctor finds him is he's been killed, but he just can't die. So the doctor spends some time trying to figure that out. And eventually another doctor sees him in the future, and he's just a giant head in a vat, and it's like 5 billion, 10 billion years in the future.
Yeah.
And he's still alive.
Yeah, it's the 10th doctor, I think, who sees him in the vat.
And they don't directly say that's Jack Harkness. They just allude to the fact that they call him the man that cannot die, which is something that Jack Harkness was called.
I remember that episode.
Yeah. It's a pretty good episode.
Very good episode.
And it's a pretty good story arc. And but he's scratching the surface on him. He's almost as big a character as, Rose. But in Bad Wolf, like I was explaining, that's when the Ninth Doctor has to make a choice between Rose living or Jack living. And Jack's stuck with it. So the Doctor takes a gamble and says Jack will be able to, he'll be all right, hopefully. So he saves Rose by taking all the energy that, Rose has been collecting into himself. And he dies and is regenerated into the 10th Doctor.
Yeah, brings us into David Tennant's tenure as the Doctor, which was season 2, 3, and 4, first appearing in The Parting of the Ways, where our Ninth Doctor is sadly leaving the world. And he last appears in The End of Times. And he was the Doctor from 05 to 2010. So my first year out of high school, he was the Doctor. But his main three seasons were 2008 through 2010. So 05, he was in there for a little bit, made some cameos in there, and then really went full force in 2008 with everything else. But David Tennant might be my favorite Doctor, personally. Okay. In my mind, he's the most human of the Doctors. Is that fair to say? Would you say so?
Yeah.
Full of energy, sarcasm, childlike nature. Very relatable as a character. Very eccentric. Another nod to maybe a Tom Baker or your wonderful Sylvester McCoy. But he's very well dressed. Always in suits, mainly navy or brown, with dress shirts and ties. Always accessorized with some Chuck Taylors, mainly the Oxblood ones, which are my favorite. And it's geek chic is what I'd like to call it.
Yeah, makes sense.
Something I'd like to wear to work every day if I could. And he had a really good influence on the series. And, he's one of the best iterations of the Doctor, not only from me or you, but he was voted by fans and critics as the Doctor, the best fan of the Doctor for several years. And Digital Spy voted him the best TV character of the 21st century.
Wow.
Which is a huge honor, for somebody who only did three seasons to make an impact like he did. And he kept his Scottish accent, right? I believe he's Scottish. Or no, Capaldi's Scottish, right?
Yeah, I think Capaldi's the Scottish one, yeah.
But Tennant had like a kind of a Scottish accent, esque to it, and he kept that as well. So this is the ushering in of, I'm going to keep my own accent, I'm going to do my own thing, really make the character me. And he brought, again, the human aspect to the Doctor, and he was a Doctor you could relate with. He had some great storylines, too. He had battles with the Master, Rassilon, the Daleks, the Cybermen. He brought in River Song, who deserves her own episode as well. the thing I like about his tenure and his story arcs were the aliens that were featured. We got the Jadoon, which we saw in Smith and Jones, Weeping Angels, the Family of Blood.
Weeping Angels are awesome. Yeah. One of my favorite.
Yeah, just from an aesthetic look.
And they're creepy.
Just from the aesthetic look, and I've seen him at little kids dressing up as them at cons, and it's amazing. And you've talked about it so many episodes, like Blink, and what is Roadblock?
What's it called? It's the one where they're stuck in the
Gridlock.
Gridlock. Yeah. They're stuck in the traffic. It's a really cool episode.
But I like Runaway, Runaway Bride, and Turn Left as well. In terms of the 10th Doctor. And as far as companions, he had a lot of companions. Yeah. He had the before mentioned Billy Piper. Rose Tyler was played by Billy Piper. He had Mickey Smith, who was Rose's boyfriend. He had Donna Noble, who debuts after the emotional goodbye to Rose.
Yeah, it's probably the most emotion you see in this.
Yeah, because there's a theory that he loves Rose.
Yeah.
And why bring on Mickey or Mikey if you love her? Right. Maybe to kill him in space and say, look, I'm the alpha now. I don't know. We have our Martha Jones, who's a doctor. We see her in our Smith and Jones episode. Captain Jack Harkness, played by John Barrowman, who's still doing great things in the DC Entertainment universe.
Can't say enough about how good he is. I love him. Much I like him.
But you know what? I will say his con behavior is kind of crazy. He wears TARDIS dresses.
He's out and proud.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He wears like full on TARDIS dresses and TARDIS high heels at the cons.
At the time that we'll go on a Captain Jack segue for a second. At the time that I watched Torchwood, I wasn't as progressive as I am now. And it wasn't really not like I didn't care, really.
Yeah.
But, like, and then when I watched it, like, he goes, like, he's making out with some dudes and, like, he's trying to bang everything that walks, like, literally everything that walks. Yep. And, you know, it wasn't as prominent as it is now.
Yeah.
So it was a little, it's like, oh, all right, whatever. And it was, I mean, but I like him. I liked, and Torchwood was good, and the stories were good, so it was worth watching.
Yeah, and he's a great actor. Just, he's very, I like him in all the CW stuff that he's in, especially Arrow. But he also had Astrid Perth, who was a one episode cameo from Kylie Minogue.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. Sarah Jane came back.
Right.
Then Jackson Lake was another one-off character, which was David Morrissey from The Walking Dead. Like, he was more known for The Walking Dead now as the governor.
Okay.
He had Rosita Ferrassi, another one-off, Lady Christina D'Souza, Adelaide Brooke, and then probably my favorite, his last companion, Wilfred Mott, the grandfather to our Donna Noble. Wilford's the oldest of the companions. I don't know why you would take a...
I think because he was dying.
Yeah, so you just wanted to take him on.
It was Donna Noble's dad and
grandfather.
Right, right. Donna Noble is like, she's very comedic. Like, she's the most comedic aspect of it. So you're coming off of Rose, like, which is very emotional, coming into Donna, and Donna's like, crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
and she was there for a good time.
Yeah.
She was there for a while.
A lot of people like Donna. You know, just her time, there's not enough of it to be like considered as Rose level, but a lot of people like her for the short time that she was on there.
And then you sprinkle in a little bit of Martha.
Yeah.
And then you're good to go. But the end for our 10th Doctor comes after the Doctor takes 500,000 rads of radiation and he is forced to regenerate, thus ending the tenure of the 10th Doctor, but opening the door for another fan favorite, which Tom is going to talk about, the 11th Doctor.
11th Doctor is played by Matt Smith.
The most handsome of the Doctors.
The most dreamy and handsomest.
The most fanfic of any Doctors is the 11th Doctor.
Yeah, Matt Smith, who... They had an idea for who the companions were going to be in Amy Pond. Well, they didn't have Amy Pond picked out yet, but they knew that they were going to go with a younger... companion and to the point where they had it written out like she was kind of going to be like the strippergram thing that she does and so they wanted somebody to kind of match her, and they wanted somebody like Matt Smith, who I think we said was 25 at the time.
Yeah, he was youngest of the Doctors,
which
is weird because like through the research and like I wanted to get to know a little bit more about Matt Smith, but Sean Pertwee and David Morrissey were also considered for this role.
Yeah, that would have been... Sean Pertwee would have been great.
I think he was the hands-down favorite.
Really?
But then Matt Smith came in, and they were like, Moffat was like, I want him.
Yeah.
He's perfect for what we need.
And I would have liked Sean Pertwee. That would have been fun. But, I mean, it would have been fun because...
The legacy.
Yeah. Who knows? And we might not have gotten Alfred, and I like Alfred. So, he's got a lot in common with Tennant in you know, that he's young and energetic, and that, I think that was something that the Doctor needed at this time, was a good long run of high energy, high emotion, just to carry it through all these emotional, like Amy Pond's, you know, was it emotional, companion, Rose was, and, you know, speckled in there was a bunch of other things, but they needed these young guys to carry all that emotion.
Yeah, less broody.
Yeah. And it worked for the time that they had him. But he kind of had like an old man aesthetic. Like, he had the bow tie, the vest, the tweed suit, and like
he's suspenders.
He's even described it, and he started wearing a fez.
Yeah. Yeah, so many Fez at conventions nowadays.
Yeah, and it's all him. So he, you know, they, the producers described him as like, or Moffat described him as an old man in a young man's body, and he really played that well. Like, he looked, I mean, you could say he was 18 years old, and yeah, it's believable. He's real young, and when they had to age him up, it was hard, but, you know, whatever. But, you know, he had like, when he played young and charismatic and kind of like a shyness, but he was always like brave. And when it came time, he really regretted making like violent decisions, but he would do it. Like, but it really weighed on him. A lot of the things that he had to do weighed on him throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, so, like we saw in Vincent and the Doctor when he killed the space chicken.
Everything weighs on him. Everything, like, he really regrets a lot of the things that he has to do, and you could tell. But, I guess that's, like, his humanity, too, is if you give humanity that much credit, that, you know, it should weigh on you.
Yeah.
It should take a toll.
Yeah, he was a relatable character as well, just like you said with Tenet.
And Stephen Moffat described him in Tenet, like, one of his favorite things to say was, they're good boyfriend doctors.
Yeah.
And I guess
because they're so damn dreamy.
Yeah. I think we're a little bit out of this now, but they're also, they're friend zone doctors because they never did anything.
Yeah.
You know,
but, and more people, more of the fans wanted them to do stuff with their, like they wanted their companions to get married and, you know, they want to fall in love.
And speaking of, companions, his is pretty famous companion. Well, yeah, actually three famous, really famous companions, Amy Pond, who became Amy and Rory. That's her boyfriend.
She might be the most successful character in the new Doctor Who universe.
Yeah,
because with the Marvel stuff, and now she's in Jumanji.
And Karen Gillan. She had a TV show for a little bit.
Yeah.
Where she just plays basically a hot Scottish chick.
I'm fine with it. Absolutely fine with it.
Yeah, she might be the most successful overall. But she's kind of a... when we meet her, she's not doing stripper grind. I don't know what it is, but it's just basically the hot girl shows up and sings to you.
Fine with me.
All right. Again, whatever. Another thing. I don't know. I don't think she didn't take anything off. I don't know if that was alluding to her taking anything off. But that's where we meet her. And her story arc's really weird for me because it just goes back and forth. This is where, like, hers is really hard to follow. And gradually through time, she creates a big rift in the universe and she has to, like, basically sacrifice herself to close it up. But Amy's in love with Rory, this is kind of like a love triangle between... I think Amy Pond, definitely loved Matt Smith.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Or the 11th Doctor.
And I don't think it was family love, like familial love.
Because she did make advances on him, and he turned her down.
She made advances on Vincent Van Gogh, too.
Right. Well, hey, whatever.
Right. What happens in time stays in time.
So she definitely made advances of him. And I guess that's because her and Rory were back and forth, just like... you know, then when... I guess Matt's... or the 11th Doctor, I guess his answer to that, to keep her maybe at bay and keep her familial, was to bring Rory on. And Rory is played by Arthur Darvill, who's... Yep.
He's playing a
Legends
time
of the Tomorrow.
Yeah, he's a time master.
Yeah,
I thought he was a time lord, but he's still doing time traveling.
He will not stop traveling through time.
He's essentially a doctor now.
Yeah, he graduated. He went to the academy and he graduated.
Yep, which brings up the rumor that he may be the master.
That would be cool.
So
he is a time master.
Yep, that would be a really cool twist crossover episode. Moffat goes on to write Legends of Tomorrow.
So Amy and Rory, they wind up because they get away from everything that they've seen and saw. They go, all companions eventually want to get out of it. They wind up going back, I think, into the early 1900s and living out their life. They die in their 80s. You know, they live the rest of their life together. They have a kid together.
Perfect year to go back to the early 1900s.
Yeah.
And their kid is River Song.
Their descendant is River Song.
Yeah.
Amy Pond, River Song, who was another companion, 11th Doctor's River Song. River Song's story, we got into a little bit last week, too, is she's not a single season recurring. She's affiliated with everybody, the three doctors, and her story involves almost all the new doctors except for Eccleston.
Yep.
And it's basically she's the doctor's wife, and you don't know when they met, but you do see when she dies, but you don't know how they met, where they fell in love. You just know she's kind of like an she's like Han Solo. She's like a time space hopping con man slash thief, like a Catwoman thief. Yeah,
she built her own sonic screwdriver.
Right. And she somehow lost, like, the doctor and her carry these books that only they carry, and it's a journal. So whenever they see each other, they check their journals, and they see where they are in that time, because she doesn't really age much, and the doctor doesn't age much, or if all, and then he changes. So, but she's from in the far in the future, so she's seen what the doctor looks like in the future and, you know, future iteration. So, and since, you know, it's not in linear, they have to, like, hey, where are you at? What time are you from? And
it's a really cool story.
Yeah. So I really like her story, and they do show when she dies, but it's, you know, it's pretty emotional. It's pretty sad. But and then his last companion is Clara Oswald. Clara's bigger. She only spends, I think, the last season, but she's got a pretty cool story. And she's played by
Jenna Coleman.
Jenna Coleman, who, I don't know. Have you seen her in anything else?
She's in Captain America, the First Avenger.
Was she really?
As one of the female companions.
The neat thing about Clara Oswald is not as Clara, but you see her throughout the whole entire new series.
Yeah.
Well, maybe for the last 3 years or so, you see her in one episode here, one episode there, and all you do is you recognize the actress.
Yep.
But she is a storyline for 2-3 seasons, and then turns out there's a reason behind all that. I'm not going to spoil that, but and she goes on to go on to the 12th Doctor, but so one of the best. I said they age him up. And it's called In the Time of the Doctor. The Doctor's lured to a planet called Transalore. He finds a message from all the other Time Lords, and there's a crack in the universe there. So the Doctor has to stay there, protect the crack, because the Time Lords are in that crack. And so as he's protecting the crack, Daleks are attacking, and he has to keep the Daleks at bay outside of, like, this fortress. So the Doctor doesn't have the TARDIS at this time. So he can't do anything else. So all he does is he sits there, keeps the Daleks away, protects the crack, and it goes on for, like, centuries and centuries, and, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and they age the Doctor. So eventually, you know, the Doctor dies because he knows he's going to die of old age, and then he's regenerated into the 12th Doctor.
The 12th Doctor, who is the current Doctor, played by Peter Capaldi, and he is in his last season. But he has gone 3 seasons, 8 through 10, consisting of a total of 39 episodes. And he first appeared in The Time of the Doctor on Christmas 2013, again, where we saw our War Doctor. And, you know, I can't say where he last appears, because it's probably the Christmas special again in 2017.
Okay, go ahead. I read something about this new one coming up.
Jodie Whittaker?
No, there was somebody else that's going to show up in it. I can't remember that.
Well, the 12th Doctor, Capaldi, is described by Capaldi as more alien than he's been in a while. He's eccentric, funny, he's fearless, he's empathetic, has gone from alien hero detached from human behavior to a thrill seeker to a very closed off person. You know, we see that in our pilot episode, The Pyramid at the End of the World, where, you know, he's doing soliloquies in the TARDIS with his guitar, just, you know, just rocking out. And he's known to be an adrenaline junkie, but who's uber unreliable.
Seems that way, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's kind of like your cool grandfather who just forgets things, but he shows up when you need him to. He's described in our first episode, like I said, to have a very simple look. You really like his look. You said it was kind of like punk rock.
aging rock star, punk rock. Yeah, I really think it is. I really like it.
Yeah, and it's easy. It's overcoat, various t-shirts,
yeah,
blue slacks, and Ray-Bans, and sometimes he rocks the hoodie.
Yeah, yeah. The overcoat has a hoodie, but it's a lot of flair. Like, the overcoat's got a blood red lining inside, yeah, like a silk lining, and it's got ruffled cuffs and stuff like that.
And it's all fitted.
Yeah.
I like it. He's my second favorite. He might be my 1B, because Tenet's style has pinstripes. I'm not a big pinstripe fan. Capaldi, he rocks a good suit. He was the odds-on favorite when Matt Smith was announced to be leaving the series.
Okay.
So they already knew that Capaldi was going to be there. There was no auditioning. They said, this is who we want. And they went from an eccentric young doctor in Smith and brought it back to an older, wiser doctor with Capaldi.
Yeah.
A grizzled vet, because, I mean, Capaldi's got a pretty good career.
Stage screen.
Yeah.
British stage screen, yeah.
And his acting has been praised by several outlets, but he's still able to keep the whimsical nature of the series. So he goes into showing how great his acting is, but saying, look, I know what the story is. I'm not going to make it about me. I'm going to make it about the series. And he's able to do it. And as far as story arcs and some of the great ones he has, the Monk trilogy, which we started, we kind of walked into. I think it was the second episode where we
Yeah, because in the beginning they do the flashback.
Yeah, and I really like that. And that's the current, the most recent season.
Yeah.
As were his interactions with Davros, the creator of the Daleks, and the Master and Rassilon. And the storyline with, I'm gonna try it.
All right.
A Shilder, also known as me. With Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones, was probably by far my favorite.
Yeah.
Because she's just a resurrected Viking girl. That's a thing to go back to.
Yeah, she can't break it.
Yeah.
Like, she keeps going back to it. And she turns out to live forever. It's a really good story.
A lot of people wanted her as the doctor. She'd been like 19?
It'd be cool, but she's already been somebody else.
Yeah, and she's in Game of Thrones, so I guess it's kind of hard for her.
She becomes like an underworld boss because she lives... she's like 1,000 years old.
I could see a spinoff.
Yeah.
There's so many characters.
It's really good. Yeah, that's a really good story. And yeah.
And he's got some pretty cool companions. He's probably got one of my favorites and one of my worst. My least favorite. So he's got Clara Oswald, Jenna Coleman. Again, joined the 12th Doctor after the 11th Doctor's regenerations. River Song needs help from the Doctor when her ship crashes.
Right.
So there's that whole interaction. Probably my favorite by far, Nardole. We met in our first episode, Matt Lucas, and if you don't know who Nardole is, he's a humanoid cyborg from the planet Mendorax Delora. So, and he's amazing. Just Google a picture of Nardole and you will fall in love.
Well, he's Matt Lucas, and I don't think Matt Lucas changes anything about character from character. He's always Matt Lucas, and he's always hilarious. And
he's part doctor, part cyborg. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, he can control the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And we see that with our, spoiler alert, with our episode. And my least favorite, Bill Potts, Pearl Mackie.
She didn't come off great.
And it wasn't just to us. You know, initial responses to Pearl Mackie weren't good.
Yeah.
And then they kind of were like, okay, we kind of like her because she's, I feel like they just tried to make her another Rose.
We didn't go far into this season.
No, we covered one episode.
Yeah, but I've only watched like two other ones just to see what was going on. Yeah, and it kind of sucked, but... maybe she gets better.
She's coming back.
Okay.
With Jodie Whittaker, as we mentioned. So she's going to be back, as will Nardole. Maybe Nardole gets a story, a spinoff. I'm pitching spinoffs. It's like I'm Oprah, just handing them out. But we can't get into the 13th Doctor right now because we only know her name is Jodie Whittaker.
Right.
But come 2018, we'll be able to do our next Doctor Who episode.
Who episode on Jodie Whittaker. Which I think will be fitting. I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, first female doctor.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. So last episode we talked about, is the doctor the most powerful creature being?
Right.
What did you think? Does he make the Sweet 16 or does he go to the Final Four?
Yeah, he makes Sweet 16, I think. Because, he's got a ton of technology, which makes him powerful. But then he does have powers to back him up.
And he can regenerate.
Yeah.
And get out with the TARDIS.
So, I mean, if you're going to say, he's got to be up there. He is Superman-like. We explained how.
I feel like he could beat Superman.
Yeah. I mean, if Batman can, we always say Batman can because of preparation and resources. And if you say Batman can because of preparation and resources, you have to say that Doctor Who can because of preparation, because he's got a time machine.
He
always has a way to prepare for something.
Yep. So I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say he's the most powerful being out there. I think he can beat anybody.
Yeah.
With the time machine. If you take away the TARDIS.
If you take away the TARDIS, I mean, he still has powers.
Yeah,
but
he just comes back to die.
Yeah. He just, he's like, if we're going to go to comics, he's an energy type of being. Like, he can absorb and deflect, and he could see time, but without the TARDIS, and without being able to travel in time, he's just he's like a Lex Luger or a Brainiac. He's just very smart and resilient.
Yeah.
But when you add the TARDIS, and that's where we say resources and time, and, you know, he's got all the time and all the resources in that case.
The wild card.
Yeah.
Well, that was our Time Lord episode. If you think the Doctor is the most powerful being, or if you don't, follow us on Facebook, Galaxy Wars Podcast. On Instagram, Galaxy Wars Podcast, Twitter, The Grays, and then SoundCloud and Apple Podcasts, The Galaxy Wars Podcast. And let us know. Next episode, we are going to go back to our original format. We're going to have a random pilot, and that random pilot is the Next Generation, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Awesome.
So we'll be back in a week to talk about that.
I can't wait.
Yep. Follow us on all of our social medias, and if you don't watch Doctor Who, start watching it. You'll love it. See ya.
Bye.